I can think of no more fitting words of testimony or commitment on our part than the title of that hymn, "Beneath the Cross of Jesus, I Fain Would Take My Stand." I want to call your attention this morning to the first part of the book of Jonah. Now, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise. Go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord, and he went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. And so he paid the fare and went on board to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. In Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, in his introduction, as he sets the stage for the tales and introduces you to the characters, he has this to say of the parson in describing his character: "This fine example to his flock he gave, that first he wrought, and afterwards he taught. If the gold rust, what shall the poor iron do? For if the priest be foul in whom we trust, what wonder if laymen yield to lust? Well ought a priest example good to give, by his own cleanness, how his flock should live, to lead folk into heaven. But by stress of good example was his business. But Christ's own lore, and his apostles 12 he taught. But first, he followed it himself. If the gold rust, what shall the poor iron do?" Have you ever seen gold corrode? Not when it's pure, or even reasonably so. Gold corrodes only when it is filled with impurities which corrode. I am disturbed. I am disturbed by the large number of reports that come to me, and even if only a portion of them are true, I'm disturbed by the reports that come to me of pastors and ministers in ministry whose ministry is destroyed because they got involved with illicit sex. I am disturbed. I am disturbed by the reports that come to me of ministers whose lives are destroyed because of their inability to handle money. I am disturbed by the fact that I hear that in most communities, a minister has the lowest credit rating of any professional category of people. I am disturbed because I consistently hear when preachers leave church fields and when students leave seminary that there are unpaid bills left behind with no forwarding address. I am disturbed when I hear that of all the Baptist bookstores operated by our convention, the 6 on the seminary campuses have the largest percentage of shoplifting. I am disturbed when year after year, as I turn in reserve lists to the library, I discover that major books have disappeared. I am disturbed. If the gold rust, what shall the poor iron do? In the book of Jonah, we are told that this successful preacher was called to render a ministry but chose not to do it. In the simple statement, he paid the fare and went on board. I wonder if he knew, if he had any inkling. I wonder if you and I have any inkling of what kind of a fare we pay when we involve ourselves in sin. And the willful, conscious, intentional disobedience of God. The fare is always higher than you imagined it would be. It's not just the moment. First, for him and for us, there is the price of willful failure. There's nothing wrong with failing. There's nothing wrong with losing a game, but intentional failure. How we have been shocked, at least if you read the sports pages, by even the implications that an outstanding young athlete may have put himself in a position where he could be even suspected of throwing a game. Or the famous statement of the little boy at the end of the, or when the publicity came out of the Black Sox scandal in baseball in the early 1900s, when he saw his hero walking out of the courtroom and said, "Say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so." There is a price of willful failure that goes beyond anything you can ever imagine. To this, of course, must be added the high price of sin. It never looks so high at first. To a David with Bathsheba and later with Uriah. To a Samson with Delilah, who discovered that haircuts cost more than he anticipated. To a Judas. Or Simon Peter. The price goes on and on and on and on. And it's a price that may never be paid. And the loss of self-esteem is no little item. You may fool all people, but you never fool yourself. In the long, dark hours of the night, you cannot escape the presence of being a sinner. It is a price that goes on and on and on. And of course, the price of guilt is never paid. We take so much for granted the fact that Jesus bore it all. But what he bore and bears for us. And the price goes on beyond that. There is the price to innocent victims. In the story of Jonah, it was the freight on board the ship. And finally, the very threat to life and limb of everyone else around him. For us, it is the tragic example we give to our people who expect so much of us. Oh, it's so easy for us to turn around and say, well, the expectations of the people in the pew for their ministers are unrealistic. Are they not? What kind of expectation do you think God has for you? I am quite aware of the textual problem, but I am also aware that the passage of the woman caught in adultery sounds very much like Jesus anyhow. And we bask in his statement, go and sin no more. Or do we? No, we bask in the first part, thy sins are forgiven. But we all like to forget that there is a call to a higher life, to a different life. And Jesus was not just entertaining his disciples when he said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Have you missed seeing God lately? What kind of a price are you paying? Jesus issued a call for purity among his disciples. And it's so easy for us to say, but I'm only human. Let me remind you that that is no excuse. For when God made you human, he looked and said, that's very good. We use our humanity as an excuse for sin. But God thought our humanity was wonderful. And Paul admonishes young Timothy, set the believers an example in speech and in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. If the gold rusts, what shall the poor iron do? You see, we are called and empowered to a new life, a different life, a better life, a pure life. Paul also admonishes us, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he also fall. For the moment we become so overwhelmingly convinced of our own purity, the moment we are that open to become impure, rusty gold. When I was a freshman in college, I heard a preacher recite a poem in chapel. I went to chapel then because I was forced to. They took roll. And you had to pass chapel as well as everything else. I don't remember a thing that preacher said, but I've never forgot the poem. And it still communicates to me. I think my soul is a tame old duck, dabbling around in barnyard muck, fat and lazy, with useless wings. But sometimes, when the north wind sings and the wild ones hurtle overhead, it remembers something lost and dead. It casts a wary, bewildered eye and makes a feeble attempt to fly. It's fairly content with the state it's in, but it isn't the duck it might have been. If the gold rust, what shall the poor iron do? Be thou an example. As a hymn of commitment and of benediction, I ask you to join with me now in singing hymn number 323. But I also ask you that you do not join with me in singing it unless you want this to be your prayer of commitment to God. 323. May we stand together.